This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Wet Wipes. Wet Wipes. Do not buy the cheap ones. For the love of all that is good in this world, please pay full price for the good ones. You'll thank me later. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Today we'll discuss Hatchet by Gary Paulson. Narratives about someone surviving in the wild have been around for quite some time. The oldest is the Odyssey, in which the hero Odysseus is the lone survivor from his fleet of ships trying to make it home from the Trojan War. But there are so many more. William Shakespeare's play The Tempest is about a father and a daughter surviving on a remote island. One of the earliest novels in the English language was Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe. It tells the story of a merchant turned adventurer who spends 28 years on a desert island. Just a few years later, Jonathan Swift published Gulliver's Travels. In the 19th century, Alfred Tennyson, Robert Louis Stevenson, and Jules Verne all wrote about people who are marooned in a desolate place. Even in recent times, castaway stories have remained popular. The 1908 novel The Blue Lagoon took a romantic view of human nature, and 1954's Lord of the Flies had the opposite point of view. Films like Forbidden Planet and television series like Lost in Space created science fiction settings for castaways. Gilligan's Island showed that the genre even works well as light comedy. More recently, The Martian by Andy Weir made for a ripping read and a really enjoyable film. Hatchet, first published in 1986 by Gary Paulson, tells the tale of a boy trying to survive alone in nature with little hope of rescue. Realistic tales of life and death situations are going to be too heavy for little ones, who will find such stories frightening rather than exciting. This book is a story of a boy turning into a teenager. That makes it a perfect gift for an older child who has just reached an age where they are capable of being challenged by bigger, more complicated ideas. The story begins with 13-year-old Brian Robison on board a small airplane, flying away from his mother in New York. His parents have split up, and he's headed to spend the summer with his dad, a mechanical engineer who works in the remote oil fields of northern Canada. He's very angry at his mother because she's the one who filed for divorce, and because she has a new boyfriend. But as the Cessna 406 heads northwest from New York, the pilot has a heart attack and dies. Brian is briefly able to communicate with somebody over the radio, but he soon drifts out of range. He manages to slow the plane enough to crash land at the edge of a lake and swim to shore. Exhausted, he collapses. When he wakes, he's in terrible pain. He's covered in mosquito bites, horribly sunburned, and dehydrated. The only tool Brian has is his hatchet, a gift his mother gave him before the flight. Brian slowly and painfully learns to survive, living mainly on fruits, nuts, and fish. He figures out how to coexist with bears, skunks, and porcupines, and discovers that if he strikes his hatchet against some flint in a rock outcropping, he can make fire. He makes and remakes a home until it is comfortable and secure. His body goes from a little chubby to quite lean and strong as he spends his days chopping firewood, hunting for food, and improving his handmade tools and his shelter under the rock overhang. After 47 days, Brian feels that his old self died when the plane went down, and he is now someone truly different. His mental narrative becomes more simple. He uses phrases like done food to mean provided himself with something to eat, and thinks of himself as being full of tough hope. A tornado nearly kills him and partially destroys his home, but it also lifts the sunken airplane. Its tail is now sticking up above the water. Brian paddles out to the airplane on his raft and dives down to recover its emergency pack. The homing beacon inside is still functional, and at last, Brian is rescued. In the end, Brian had spent 54 days alone by the lake. He had become lean and wiry, and his relationship with food was permanently changed. He never took food for granted again, and marveled at the variety and quantity of items in grocery stores. For a while, he becomes a bit of a celebrity, but he's eventually able to go back to what is more or less an ordinary life. His parents are overjoyed to have their son return to him, and for a few days, it almost looks as if they'll reconcile. But Brian's dad goes back to the oil fields, and Brian's mother stays in New York with her career in real estate and her new boyfriend. Although Brian tries to tell his father about his mother's new relationship several times, he eventually decides not to. Hatchett tells a story that isn't completely likely, but it is plausible. The author, Gary Paulson, has spent quite a lot of time living in wild places, and this firsthand experience is what allows him to tell a story that is so immersive and so real. It stays focused on Brian's moment-to-moment existence, with very few flashes into the past or thoughts for the future. This keeps Hatchett fresh no matter how old it gets, because survival in the wild is a timeless experience. Robinson Crusoe, which was published in 1719, will always be important because it's the first proper novel in the English language and the forerunner of all stories about survival in the wild, including Hatchett. But the content of the novel hasn't really aged well. It's didactic, meant to be morally instructive. It lays on the moral and religious teachings a little too thick. This was fine in the 18th century when that style was normal and even popular, but to modern readers, it's pretty tedious. No 13-year-old is going to have a good time reading Robinson Crusoe, but I haven't yet met a kid that didn't love Hatchett. This is a story about how far human beings have drifted from nature, and what can happen when the reality of survival comes crashing down like, well, a Cessna piloted by a dead man. There's no romanticizing of nature happening here. Brian is first punished by gravity when the plane crashes. Then the bugs, the sun, and the high fiber content of a large meal of choke cherries punish him. As a city slicker, Brian has very little knowledge about the wild. The only thing that helps him is his own intelligence, and the reader gets to learn along with him. This story is so detailed, we can even get an idea of how Brian would have been doing nutritionally. His diet consists of choke cherries, raspberries, hazelnuts, fish, rabbits, and snapping turtle eggs. That would have given him plenty of fiber, a full range of B vitamins, and also vitamins C, E, and K. He was out in the sun enough for his body to generate plenty of vitamin D. The food he was eating was loaded with magnesium, folate, copper, manganese, iron, potassium, selenium, and phosphorus. Brian's diet was very low on carbohydrates, which is why he loses 17% of his body weight and is always hungry. There's one good thing about his low-sugar diet, though. His teeth would have been a lot less vulnerable to cavities, which is good because he wouldn't have been getting any fluoride from treated water or toothpaste. There are two critical deficiencies in his diet. He would have been getting almost no vitamin A or calcium. Over time, vitamin A deficiency can lead to blindness, and lack of calcium can lead to muscle cramps, tooth decay, weak bones, and death. Malnutrition would have been a serious effect on a growing teenager. But since Brian was at the lake for less than 2 months, he would have been okay as long as he received proper medical care after being rescued. Hatchet offers a very good opportunity for readers to think about our modern lifestyle. We are incredibly sedentary, and generally we have to do very little to survive. Our diet is heavy in processed sugar, salt, and fat. It's very low on whole foods rich in fiber and nutrients. Brian's forced dietary reset changed him permanently for the better. He became leaner, healthier, stronger, and more able to understand what he really needed, because his body wasn't being manipulated by foods designed in a lab to keep him eating, yet somehow never satisfied. Given the urgent crisis of childhood obesity, and the way parents can be misled and manipulated by processed food makers, I think this book is a very good way to introduce the idea that we humans are part of nature, and that we need to move our bodies, we need to exercise, we need to do vigorous things outdoors, because that's what we evolved to do. We ought to feed our bodies in a way that matches what our biology needs, instead of what food manufacturers offer to get us hooked on tasty but dangerous products wrapped in plastic. Brian's sudden short-term need to learn to be self-reliant runs parallel with the way he must suddenly grow up emotionally. He has to provide himself with food and shelter or he will not live. He solves one problem at a time, learning how to prioritize. He learns to make a fishing spear, a bow and arrows, a more secure fence for his home. He also becomes more mature in his thoughts about his parents' divorce. His setting provides him the space and time to think about what's really important and what he really ought to let go of. He also becomes more mature in his thoughts about his parents' divorce. The author limits the information about Brian's parents to things a 13-year-old would understand. Brian has positive feelings about his father and is very angry with his mother. The text indicates that Brian kind of understands what his father does. Quote, "His father was a mechanical engineer who had designed or invented a new drill bit for oil drilling, a self-cleaning, self-sharpening bit." But the story doesn't bother mentioning that the mother works in real estate until the last page of the book. This is kind of an important detail. This favoritism toward his father continues through the whole story, and it's unclear at the end if Brian has forgiven his mother. It makes sense that Brian would have more friction with his mother. He lives with her, so he can see her flaws every day. He hardly sees his dad, so there's no friction and no opportunities to see that he isn't perfect either. Younger teens will be ready for these kinds of considerations, and this plot point can be used to help children reevaluate their relationships with their parents as they become adults. There will be some struggles and fights, but ideally a parent and child learn to accept one another's flaws, make amends for their mistakes, and come to respect one another in a grown-up relationship. In the 1980s, divorce was still a very, very big deal socially. There was a lot of stigma around being a divorced person, and even more sadly, being the child of a divorced person. Happily, modern kids are less likely to experience this stigma unless they come from certain communities that still place a strong taboo against divorce. But the trauma of going through having your family broken apart and reformed is still just as intense as back when it was divorce itself that was stigmatized. Brian's pain can be very relatable to children who are going through this with their own families. His anger is understandable, but he needs to outgrow it, and so will kids reading the book. Brian seems to blame his mom for everything. But from my adult perspective, I think she's the better parent. She's not the one who bailed on the family and went to another country. She's the one who filed for divorce, and yes, she has a new boyfriend, but that's just her being responsible enough not to drag things out so that she and her son can move on. Brian's mom is even being responsible by not introducing her new flame to her son right away. It wouldn't be right to bring a new father figure into Brian's life while he's still vulnerable and hurting from the divorce, unless she's sure he's sticking around. She shows no animosity toward her ex and is pretty supportive of Brian spending the summer with his father. She gives him a gift that is a powerful symbol of support for Brian's relationship with his dad, the hatchet. Even if her marriage to him is over, she still recognizes the importance of Brian's father in her son's life and offers a tool that they can use together. The hatchet is also a mark of respect to Brian's maturity, as such a gift would be too dangerous for an irresponsible child. The hatchet symbolizes his mother's trust, respect, and support. His mother's unconditional love is what allows Brian to survive. But Brian's too young to realize any of this. He calls his mother's new relationship the secret, spelled with capital letters, even though most likely his mother is just correctly waiting to introduce the boyfriend until she knows he's a permanent fixture. He's being 13, sulky, uncommunicative, and taking out his feelings on his mother by giving her the silent treatment. When she gives him the hatchet, his response is, "Thanks, it's really nice." He's so callous that even he can see he's hurt his mother's feelings. The irony is that as angry as he is at his mother, her gift does the most to keep him alive during that long summer alone by the lake. It's the hatchet that helps him make fire. The hatchet that chops firewood to keep him warm and safe from insects. The hatchet helps Brian make hunting tools. All along, right there in his hands, is the unconditional presence of his mother, keeping him alive in his time of greatest danger. By the time Brian comes home, he's taught himself not to dwell too much on his parents' divorce. He's learned not to wonder if it was his fault. He decides not to tell his dad that his mom has moved on, which is a big sign that he's moving on. Ideally, in the future, he'll learn how to talk to his parents about his feelings. Maybe one day he'll get more of the details from both of them, when he's old enough to understand the complexities of adult relationships. But for now, it seems that his parents are trying to raise their son responsibly, with neither party bad-mouthing the other, and both wanting Brian to have a good relationship with the other one. But for now, there's a lot he just can't understand, and the progress Brian has made is to intuitively realize that sometimes it's better to leave things be, and that's enough for a 13-year-old. This book wouldn't have been any good if Brian had spent those 2 months by the lake and then somehow returned a fully formed adult. That wouldn't have been believable. He has an intense experience that hardens his muscles, his wits, and his self-control. He has a massive emotional and intellectual growth spurt, but he's still a boy, and he still has a lot of growing up to do. That's normal and healthy. As much as teenagers would love for puberty to be over in 2 months, that's just not how it works. It's good for teenagers to see a character make a realistic, small amount of progress. Students who read Hatchet can do a lot of interesting writing and research around the book. For a writing activity, have students start a survival journal, putting in entries as they read Brian's story. They can choose a location to be stranded in, describe how they got there, any injuries they have, what tools they have to help them survive, the food they live on, and conclude with whether or not they survive and whether or not they make it back to civilization. For a more scientific activity, have students research Brian's diet. I've made a chart that can be used to list the nutrients in the food Brian ate. This can help students think about their own diets and consider what balance of nutrients they're getting and if they're missing anything important. More advanced students could write a research paper explaining the short and long-term effects of a diet low in vitamin A and calcium and what, if anything, Brian could have done to find these nutrients in the wilds of Canada. Brian is a great role model for kids who have just reached an age where things begin to change for them. School abruptly shifts from elementary or primary school, where students are closely guided by a single teacher, to middle school, where they receive instruction from many different teachers and are increasingly on their own when it comes to academics. Their bodies change, and their social relationships change. Boys and girls discover boys and girls. Hatchet is a book that parents and teachers can use to spark conversations about independence, critical thinking, survival skills, coping with life's twists and turns, taking responsibility for your own health, and the ways relationships become more complex as people move from childhood to adulthood. It belongs in the center of a bookshelf labeled Novels That Will Help You Get Through Puberty, and it should remain on a bookshelf labeled Books You Should Revisit as an Adult so you can learn something about yourself all over again. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.